Welcome to the For the Church podcast, another great gospel-centered resource from Midwestern Baptist Theological Seminary. My name is Jared Wilson. I'm an assistant professor of pastoral ministry and author in residence at Midwestern Seminary. And I'm here as always with my friend and my colleague and my co-host, AD of ministry placement.
There you go. That's sounding better now. That's starting to...
People wonder what AD means.
You could put a disclaimer like AD of ministry placement, parentheses, AD means assistant director. Close parenthesis.
Well, now I'm making it even longer than it was if I just said assistant director. It's Ross Ferguson.
That's
He's
me.
Here. Yeah, yeah. Ross, no middle name, Ferguson. How you been, brother? We had a potluck last night.
We did.
Yeah. And you know what? There was actually some good food there.
There was good because potlucks are usually not great.
I mean, it's when you leave things up to chance, sometimes it can be a little rough.
Yeah.
But someone brought jambalaya. Someone brought ribs.
Yeah.
Who brings barbecue ribs to a potluck? I don't know who brought them, but there was ribs. There was all kinds of, I mean, it was decent. Yeah. It was maybe the best potluck that I've been to. And
it's always sad when people have to take food home. So I'm always like nervous that Miriam made sausage rolls and she was the one that brought the jello shots.
Okay. They were not real jello shots.
Jello shots.
People were joking that they were jello shots.
And they were all taken. Everything was gone.
Because people probably thought they were jello shots.
but yeah, I potlucks for, I remember one that a guy said, come and try my meat surprise.
Okay.
And I went, what do you mean by that? And he went, I'm not going to tell you what meat's in it.
Oh, yeah.
I'm not going
to
try that.
I bet you he had a lot to take home after.
Yes, he did. And afterwards, I found out it was moose and goose.
Oh, I see. If he had said that, I would have eaten it.
But, yeah. And also, it's like, some people think they're really good at cooking.
Uh-huh, yes.
Those people... might need to go buy something instead.
There were some purchased items.
There were some purchased items.
I saw some
items,
purchased dessert items and things there. And there was somebody who just sort of like rolled up pieces of lunch meat or deli meat and put a toothpick in it.
Yeah.
And like, you don't have to be a cook or whatever. And no, that's just a neat little snack, you know?
That's what I would do.
I had a few of those, you know? You don't need a talent to contribute. Yeah. Becky made meatballs and man, they were, by the time I got to the line, there were like four
there
left.
There was not many left.
Yeah. So...
cookies, a lot of cookies. Can I make a plea if you're at a potluck?
Yeah.
A few people can make cookies, but we don't need 10 people making cookies.
Well, there wasn't a sign up. There wasn't.
Or make different.
It was a true potluck.
Yeah. If you're going to make cookies,
it was just bring two things.
Make them different or something. I don't know.
So you get, you know, it's not a pot predestination. It's a potluck.
Reviews.
Oh, we got some reviews. This one comes from Sarah T. 1223. Sarah T. 1223 says, thankful for this podcast. 5 stars. I've been listening to FTC for about 6 months now to check out my friend's new pastor and her neighbor to be sure she's in good hands after she moved to Oklahoma from Louisiana.
She means Casey.
I guess she means Casey.
I know who this is.
Okay. Since I enjoy the podcast, I guess we'll let her stay there for another year. Thanks for answering my questions about podcasts, conferences, et cetera, recently. Praying for you guys and your ministry.
I think this is referring to one of my upstairs neighbors who has been studying here.
A member of our church.
Yes.
And so it's a friend of hers is just checking in.
She's in a safe hands at this campus.
Okay. So, well, I'm glad you've been reassured, Sarah T.
Oh, my word. The next review.
This is Spooky Dukes. Spooky Dukes.
It's a long review.
Do I read this whole thing? I haven't pre-read it. I'm just reading it on the fly.
I think you're going to have to.
Okay. A providential podcast, 5 stars. My first encounter with Jared and Ross came at a conference they attended back in March 2025. I had the privilege of hearing them do a live mailbag episode of their podcast, the only one we've ever done, and immediately fell in love with not only their dialogue, but also their theological perspectives. I don't run in Baptist circles, so there are subjects we might respectfully disagree on, but what I love about FTC is in the name. It's a podcast for the church, no matter the denomination. I come away from each episode feeling educated and entertained, yet also sometimes challenged. Not to second guess or doubt my personal convictions, but to think about them in a way that asks, am I willing to consider these things from a new angle? Are my convictions Christ-centered or me-centered? So I feel very served for this ministry. I'd also like to thank Jared for his book, The Storied Life, which I discovered as a result of the podcast. As someone who has been a lifelong writer, but often a very discouraged writer, his words have fanned a faltering flame. Look at that alliteration. Look at you, writer. fanned a faltering flame in my heart and have refreshed my understanding of calling and of how God has wired me to write for his glory. If my writing is ever published, Jared, look for your name in the acknowledgments. All right. You've really been a blessing to me, and I plan to revisit your book as often as I can, et cetera, et cetera. I'll shorten the flattery for me. P.S., as I've worked my way through the backlog, I finally come to the pet peeves episodes, which are good for a laugh, but I can see why they were discontinued. Oh, no. No judgment here, but that was a wise move, fellas. Okay.
Oh, Spooky Duke. They're my favorite episodes.
We've actually had people ask us, can you do more pet peeves?
We've just now introduced pet peeves into every episode.
Yeah, we just sort of filter them in. They permeate everything we do. This comes from Heather M. 127. Heather M. 127, weekly favorite. This is the title of the review. 5 stars. I listen weekly for the content, the banter, and most of all, the transitions. Thank you for sharing your experiences and your love for Jesus with us all. Thank you, Heather. And, you know, at this point, if I did a good transition, it would be out of character. Yeah. So, like, it's just keeping with the podcast to do bad transitions. So that's what we're going to keep on doing. Finally, this comes from C.T. Coulson. C.T. Coulson says, title of the review, even my wife likes it. All right. Okay. Talk about backhanded. Even my wife likes it. I don't know if that's an insult to the wife or to us, but 5 stars. Longtime freeloader, first time reviewer. This has become one of my favorite podcasts. I look forward to a new episode each week. I recently made my wife listen to an episode on a long car ride. She doesn't usually care for the opening or in-between topics banter of podcast hosts, but she said Jared and Ross are actually fun to listen to. They seem to have fun and carry a level of humility. It's a good pod with many thoughtful topics for anyone who cares for the church. Well, thank you, C.T. Coles. And you know what? I don't know anyone more humble than you and me. We are the most humble.
All I'm going to say is this is a new marketing strategy.
What's that?
Husbands.
Oh, yeah.
Make your wives listen to this podcast.
Double it up.
Wives, make your husbands listen to this podcast.
If only we got if only it counted. Like, I wonder how many of the downloads we get are actually multiple people
millions,
on one listening.
Millions.
So could we double our numbers, right? Like, because maybe there's even people gathered around a table. Hey, guys, we're going to listen to this podcast, and they press play, and there's like 6 of them around a table just all listening to the same recording.
I just had a thought.
Yeah?
If married couples are doing this, maybe if you're single, your date could be, we're going to go for a meal and listen to the podcast. Maybe this is the way to find their future husband and future wife.
Yeah.
Is put the podcast at the center.
And then, like, when they get married and they have and someone writes their life story, we'll be in that life story. Yeah. And speaking of life stories, today's episode is favorite biographies.
That was actually pretty good.
Well, I set it up. Yeah. I was like, how do I turn this into a transition? I thought, well, I'll make it. I'll force it.
Okay.
It wasn't there. So I created it, created the life story scenario so that I could introduce favorite biographies. Now, you and I have something in common. There's one reason why I wanted to do this episode.
Okay.
One thing you and I have in common is we don't read a lot of biographies.
No.
You're not a big biography guy. No. I've come late to biographies and even to history in general. That's really only come for me like maybe in the last 10 years or so, but I don't read as many biographies as like, you know, I don't know. My friend Clint Pressley, the current president of the Southern Baptist Convention, I feel like all he reads exclusively is history. Mm. And it just seems like he reads a biography like every week. It feels like that's a lot of history and biographies. And I just don't read like that.
I don't know if I have a reason of why I don't.
Yeah. Why are we like that?
My wife does. And I know.
Okay.
Like, does Becky?
I wouldn't say she reads a lot of biographies. Okay. She reads some. She's more fiction and historical fiction.
Miriam definitely reads a lot of biography. And then my friend Jonathan Carswell, 10 of those, he's always plugging biographies and he always makes them sound really amazing. And then
Recently read Elliot's.
I think Miriam's got that one as well.
Yeah, but I don't think she reads a whole lot of them.
I think there's a part of me, just a part of me that goes... I read a lot for ministry settings. So whether I'm writing papers or writing sermons or something like that, which means often I'm not really reading for just me.
I see.
And I wonder if I had more time to read for just me.
I just don't. Biography is just not at the top of that list. I read more fiction.
Maybe we need to challenge our listeners to recommend like a biography that we just have to read.
Yeah. Well, but that's what we're going to do here, too. We're going to recommend. It'll be a trade-off. You tell us what bios we got to read.
Yeah.
We're going to tell you right now what bios you need to read.
Do you want to go first?
Yeah, my list is short. I think yours is as well.
Yeah.
It's basically ones that have been somewhat meaningful to me.
Yep. That's the same with mine.
So I'll start with maybe the first biography that I read that was hugely impactful to me. I'm sure I'd read other bios before this, but that really just like, I don't know, inspired me to grow, to be more like Christ, to rethink my assumptions culturally and spiritually. And it's the biography of Keith Green, the contemporary Christian musician, one of the early sort of out of the Jesus movement Christian musicians, late 70s into the early 80s. It's called No Compromise. No Compromise. It's written by Keith's widow, Melody Green, and she wrote it with a fellow named David Hazard. And it's basically just the life story of Keith Green, his story of conversion, his story of early discipleship, the rise of his music career, and how he stewarded that, not just, you know, to the glory of God, but also into the helping of the poor and the helping of addicts and street kids and others who. They would build homes to kind of house the homeless and different things like that. And there was just, you know, I got into Keith Green's music through the influence of a relative and also through a youth pastor of mine. And that kind of opened the door for me to kind of explore the Jesus movement stuff. And I started to kind of, a lot of the artists, the musical artists that I was into as a young man had direct influence from the Jesus movement. So they themselves may not have been a part of it, but like the Rich Mullinses and the 77s and some of like the Christian alternative bands, they were all influenced by Randy Stonehill and Larry Norman and Keith Green. And so I started listening to those guys. And so I read the bio because of my interest in Keith's music. And I just was blown away just like how radical he was. I mean, he really was just like, he wanted to take the Bible literally and take the call of discipleship, the cost of discipleship literally. And so as a teenager, you know, still kind of sorting out my faith, it just was hugely impactful to me.
Yeah. It's interesting the things that motivate us to read a biography, the things that trigger us to think, oh, I think I would like to read more on that. So I had kind of a trigger, if you will. So the church that I attended in Edinburgh when I was a kid was called Carruthers Christian Centre. Sits right in the middle of Edinburgh, right on the Royal Mile between the Parliament and the castle. And the history of it is that D.L. Moody was involved in its establishing year. So he went and preached in the Royal Mile and wanted to establish a church there. And a famous line, he wanted to serve the best cup of coffee while also preaching the gospel. So this was kind of like the two things together. And so then as a kid, it was always intriguing and interesting to me that there's this kind of American character that was in Scotland and was impactful, and his ministry was impactful to some extent, very similar to Spurgeon, just very impactful, but just in a different environment. And so I read his biography, it was written by, and I'm trying to find the name, A.P. Fitt. And I think A.P. Fitt, if memory serves me right, is his son-in-law.
Okay.
And he wrote it on, it's called The Life of D.L. Moody, A Biography of the Great Evangelist. And the thing that I recall, I've read the book actually two or three times. And the reason I kind of go back to it is he didn't have the greatest of starts. In fact, his start wasn't necessarily a ministry-focused start. He was known for working in sales and basically developing a financial foundation that would allow him then to do ministry in later life. And the thing that's just always intrigued me about D.L. Moody is that he had multiple big failing points in life. And I'm not meaning like moral failings, just the Great Chicago Fire and just multiple things that made him lose money, made him lose property, and had to restart multiple times, yet just kept serving the Lord. And then for me, just being from in and around Edinburgh, seeing this kind of great man come from the States to be involved in the UK and then return to the States, it's just intriguing to me to see those connections. And so I really enjoyed reading that. As I say, I've read it a few times. I've just passed on to somebody else recently. And then just recently in New Year, we had the opportunity to drive up to Chicago and spend some time in Chicago. And I was able to see Moody Bible Institute. Mm. And I think for me, that biography was exciting as a kid because it had that connection to America. And now as an adult, it's that kind of excitement of it has now a connection back to my home church, back to where I grew up in church. And so maybe that's what intrigues me more about biography, and my other options are going to show similar signs of a connection to something I know.
Yeah.
But before me, there's a history here before me. I don't know if I'd be all that interested in biographies of just like a random guy I don't know, but that connection to me personally. So yeah, that's The Life of D.L. Moody, A Biography of the Great Evangelist by A.P. Fitt.
Okay. My next recommendation is by a colleague of ours here at Midwestern Seminary, Thomas Kidd. And he's written several biographies as well as, I mean, his area is history. But my favorite of his that I've read is George Whitefield, America's Spiritual Founding Father, George Whitefield by Thomas Kidd. Read this probably about 6 or so years ago, and man, I just was so impacted by it. It opened the door for me to explore more of Whitefield's sermons, which I hadn't really read. I was interested already in Whitefield due to my time in New England. And knew about, his hand or how the Lord used him in kind of the first Great Awakening and the revivals there, but just did not have a lot of details, just kind of had the broad strokes of like who he was and what he did kind of in big picture. And so getting the nitty gritty of the ins and outs of his ministry, the persecution that he faced as well. I also was not aware of sort of the size of his ministry. I mean, obviously we think about, the First Great Awakening, it's a big deal, but, the crowds that he preached to,
huge.
The way his voice seemed to have almost the supernatural carriage to it. And Kidd goes into all of that. Mm. He talks about some of the assassination attempts on his life and just different things. It just was riveting to me. Yeah. It was so well written and so in depth about a really important figure in American church history and really global church history as well. I mean, he was not an American, but he came to the States and to the colonies. And I mean, just was a great preacher. And I just found the whole bio I couldn't put it down. It was one of those, like, I'm not a biography guy, but it was a real page turner for me.
Did Wesley come into that biography? Because am I remembering right?
Yes,
that,
they were
that
friends.
Whitefield and Wesley were friends, but then kind of fell out towards the end of their lives.
They would fall in and out over time. And so, yeah, he does allude to some of the letters that they exchanged, and you can kind of see sort of like the ins and outs, ups and downs of their relationship theologically. Yeah. And Whitefield kind of came out of sort of that holiness tradition, the Methodism sort of thing.
Because they kind of had a almost like a Paul Timothy relationship where Whitefield like handed over some ministry to Wesley to be able to to move. And I think it's really interesting when you talk about preaching to large crowds and Whitefield. I think it was, is it Spurgeon that at his college used to measure
supposedly would
guys
measure the chest
to see if they had the lung capacity to preach in large areas.
If you didn't have a certain barrel or girth to your chest, you didn't really qualify for preaching in the
past. Let's not reintroduce that. okay, my next one is a slight cheat. I think we hopefully will agree on this, that I actually listened to this on Audible. I'm going to take that as still...
Oh, it's a cheat in that you listened to it.
Yeah,
I thought you meant like it wasn't really a biography.
No, it is a biography. Oh, okay, it's a biography with additions, and I'll go into that. But yeah, if you listen to biography on Audible, we'll accept that as well, because I'm going to accept it for me. John Knox by Douglas Wilson.
Okay.
So I'm actually about to start a PhD and I'll be writing on John Knox. But again, there's something intriguing here for me. So again, John Knox's most significant ministry was based in Edinburgh, St. Giles. So as I mentioned earlier, where D.L. Moody had this church, Carruthers Christian Centre, at the bottom of the hill was the Parliament, at the top of the hill was the castle. And in between those two things were Carruthers Christian Centre, D.L. Moody, but much more historical, St. Giles. which in St. Giles was a Presbyterian church that John Knox became minister of, and his parsonage, his house, is still on the Royal Mile, and it's a tourist attraction. So I had what I would say is a loose idea of who John Knox was, and just from St. Giles and walking up and down the street. But the more I learned about John Knox, the more I felt like a personal affinity to him in his preaching style. He was known as a very simple preacher, but very clear on the gospel, and would often, he was called the Flying Scotsman because it would look like he was flying out of the pulpit as he preached. And so it just intrigued me to know more about his life. And so Douglas Wilson, PhD professor, taught at the University of Pennsylvania, I think.
So this is not the Doug Wilson that's in Moscow, Idaho?
No.
Okay.
No.
All right.
Different one. Okay. He wrote a biography, and it's interesting. The book is actually a kind of 50-50. So the first 50% of the book is a biography on the life of John Knox. And what you'll find is actually there's not a ton of information on John Knox, but he covers the vast majority. And he was really good at just being able to each chapter show both the emotions that the Knox was playing on and also the things that he was involved in. And so there's things he wrote that are fairly controversial, but Wilson goes into the reason why he may have written those things and actually maybe why it wasn't as controversial as one might think. So I really enjoyed that kind of first half listening to it. So I was doing quite a lot of driving for Pulpit Supply and I was listening to that. And it came to the end and it just said like the end. And I thought, oh, I'll hit it. And I saw that I had 2.5 hours left. And I thought, what's happening here? He then, in the second half of the book, basically goes back through Knox's life, but now touches on different theological principles that he held to and how they showed through his life.
Interesting.
So it was really interesting to get both the personal kind of biography and then almost the theological biography of why he would preach certain things or do certain things or believe certain things based on his writing and his theological stance. And so I found that, again, maybe that is partly a cheating. It made it more interesting to me because this was not just about his life, but also about his beliefs and what motivated him to do certain things. And in that section, that kind of theological section, he talks about his like almost frustrated, irritated willingness to become a preacher. And actually he denies it the first time. And then the second time when he was asked, it was actually from a pulpit that he was asked to become a preacher, he would weep and wail because he didn't want the responsibility. He knew how big a responsibility it was. And in this theological section, Wilson goes into explaining how important it was that Knox was almost the reluctant preacher, because that meant that when he did preach, it just carried this sense of authenticity. This was not just a man reading off, you know, from the Book of Common Prayer. This was not just an agenda seeking guy. This was somebody who genuinely felt the impact of what sermons can do. So yeah, I really enjoyed that biography to the point where, as I say, my PhD will be looking into Knox's impact on the Scottish Reformation. So
very cool.
I really enjoyed that and would recommend it on Audible. That's where I listened.
Awesome. My next recommendation is J.I. Packer, An Evangelical Life by Leland Ryken. J.I. Packer, An Evangelical Life by Leland Ryken, which is a more recent bio. There's a few bios actually of J.I. Packer. Alistair McGrath's is probably pretty famous as well. But this is a more recent biography that I read a few years ago. And really enjoyed, you know, Packer is really kind of the last of his generational giants, right?
Yeah.
The Packer and Stott and Martin Lloyd-Jones and some of those. He's kind of the last to kind of do it. And he set such a legacy or left such a legacy, not just in his theological writing and thinking, and even just sort of the evangelical guidance. Because I think a lot of people think of Packer as a theologian, which he is. But a very pastoral and philosophical thinker as well. So like recently, I've been reading Lexham Press a couple of years ago put out a collection when Packer, I forget what his position was, but at Christianity Today, he was one of the editors, editorial director, or just editor in chief or something. But he wrote a monthly column and the subjects were all over the place.
Yeah.
Everything from what was going on culturally at the time to even just some reflections, on biblical passages, those sorts of things. And they did a collection of all the CT pieces he'd done. And I'm reading that right now. And so you just see like what a careful pastoral thinker he is as well. And Ryken's bio is, you know, it's the first sort of dive I've done into Packer's life.
Yeah.
You know, and there's a tiny intersection where he ministered to me personally as well. And so I thought, you know, this is good to kind of open this door, and this is, you know, the last giant really.
Yeah.
And you just see, first of all, in that bio in particular, this thread of humility, the way Packer prized kind of weakness.
Yeah.
I mean, I think the last book he wrote was a little book called Weakness is the Way. I think that was the last book he wrote, which is a very good book as well. Very short book and worth reading. But you just see from his childhood why he would be that way. Mm. It was almost like the Lord had set him on a trajectory of humility, boasting in weakness, a very Christ-like meekness to him, not afraid to take a stand, not afraid to take shots for, you know, for certain things. And perhaps rightfully so. I don't agree with every, you know, stand Packer made, you know, maybe like evangelicals and Catholics together, that kind of, you know, rubs me the wrong way. And, but he writes about that in this little essay, collection, but just the different stands that he took, you know, we're going to reform the Church of England, not going to leave it, you know, all those sorts of things. You see that he was not a wimpy guy, but he was a meek and humble guy. And Ryken's bio really does a good job of kind of bringing to bear the Christ-centeredness of his purpose in those things.
I think The Way of the Dragon, The Way of the Lamb.
Oh, that's right.
There's a whole section on Packer in
a whole chapter on him.
And I always remember they talk about... the authors talk about walking behind Packer and the giant of the faith, the giant of the ministry. And he's just this kind of frail little old man and no one would know the impact he's had in the Christian world. And again, it's just that reminder of one can be a big deal, yet continue to remain humble and meek.
Yes. He was the series editor for the Knowing the Bible Bible study series at Crossway did. And I wrote the Romans entry in that, which I was very intimidated by. And I just thought, you know, to have Packer as a series editor is kind of a figurehead position. Like, what is he? Well, it turns out he actually read these and gave notes and things on them. And I remember a friend of mine who did to the Hebrews, Matt Capps, got Packer's edits on his manuscript. Yeah. And so I thought, well, I wonder if there's edits for mine. And I, you know, emailed Dane Ortland, who is the managing editor of that series, and asked, like, do you have stuff from Packer on my manuscript? And he's like, yeah. And he's like, overnighted it to me.
Yeah.
And it made me weep in my office. And I opened up this FedEx package and I'm reading through. He had a very light, he wasn't the line by line guy.
Yeah.
He just read it and was given some feedback. But on my notes on Romans 2, where Paul says is God's kindness that leads us to repentance. I had a period and I said something like it's God's kindness that leads us to repentance, not his nagging, not his scolding, not his cajoling, but his kindness. Period. Packard crossed out the period and wrote an exclamation point, changed this to an exclamation point. And I was like, oh, that's so amazing. And I remember telling a friend of mine who actually knows J.I. Packer personally. Yeah. I was hanging out with him and I told him this story. I was like, man, I just started crying in my office, like, if you had told me, you know, 20 years ago when I wanted to kill myself that I would be reading edits on my manuscript from J.I. Packer.
Yeah.
And especially on that particular note, that exclamation point. Yeah. Yes, it is God's kindness that leads us. And he goes, well, let's tell him. And he pulled out his phone and he says, Siri, call J.I. Packer. And the next thing you know, I'm talking to J.I. Packer on the telephone. And he was so kind. He didn't really know who I was. And he's like, oh, you know, I work on so many things. I was like, I'm not asking you to know who I am. I just want you to know how much this meant to me. And he was so appreciative of that. It was sweet. It was just this little moment of goodness. All right. Your next recommendation.
Yeah. So again, I'm going to cheat a little bit. So one of the things we do as a family is we like to listen to biographies when we're traveling, and we do a lot of traveling. We do a lot of road trips, and our road trips will be easily 5 to 15 hours in one direction and then same way back. So we'll listen to 2, 3, 4 books on those journeys. And we've kind of come across a series of books that are ultimately written for, I would probably place them at a kind of like young teenage, so kind of like the 10 to 13 year olds, preteen, but they're written really well that actually as an adult you get a good overview, and I've really enjoyed the series. So it is Christian Heroes Then and Now, Christian Heroes Then and Now, and we have listened to so many of them. I'm just kind of pulling up all the ones we've listened to, but so just a few that we've covered. We did John Newton, Jim Elliot, Adoniram Judson, William Carey. We've also done Eric Liddell, the Wesley brothers. There's so many. There's maybe like 40 in the series. And in some senses, this is a cheat that I would recommend just the whole series and to listen to them as a family. So they are between 4 and 6 hours to listen to. They don't go massively in depth, but they go in depth enough that it really makes you think. So the one that that our family, I remember having a lot of conversations on, was the one on Dietrich Bonhoeffer.
Okay.
And the question kept coming up of, he is getting involved in the assassination attempt of Hitler. And I remember our kids being really shocked by that and wanting to ask us questions of, is it ever right to kill as a Christian? You know, was Bonhoeffer still a Christian at that time? And we had loads of conversations. And I think one of the things that I've really enjoyed about this series is it makes these missionaries and big Christian figures of history accessible to the whole family. And if I'm generally not a fan of biographies, what I am a fan of is being able to do things as a family together. And we've done secular books together. We've listened to the whole of Harry Potter, and we're considering maybe doing the Lord of the Rings. You know, we'll do things like that. We listened to the whole of Narnia together. And so we've enjoyed these things, but biographies have just led us to lots of conversations. So one of the things that came up was the amount of missionary biographies that we listened to in this series where the missionary dies like a really horrible death or is forgotten. And that kind of came up of, you know, do missionaries know that they're putting their lives on the line? And it's really led our girls to open their eyes to the things they can do and the types of trips they could do, and just the impact that they can have on people's lives and what they do. And I think the one that I'm trying to remember the name, George Mueller, that's it. Mueller one really kind of caught our attention as a family, because we listened to that at a time in our lives where we really didn't have a lot and we were struggling. And we listened to it with our kids, and our kids just realizing, I don't know if we pray enough about these things. And so is it one biography? No, but I would highly recommend the series. Now, there is a downside to the series. They do like to try accents. And they're really bad.
Oh, no.
You just have to make the decision to just accept.
Overlook it.
That's how they sound. But the Christian Heroes Then and Now, highly recommend it. And if you're on something like Audible, they will occasionally do sales where you can get them each for like 99 cents type thing. So we like bought tons of them for road trips. But I would really encourage you that might be something you could do as part of your family devotions. Maybe before the kids go to bed, stick it on a speaker, listen to 10, 20 minutes of kind of a Christian hero from the past. And allow your children, allow your teenagers, allow your whole family to understand that there was many that went before you in the Christian faith. So yeah, highly recommend that.
Very cool. My last recommendation is The Sketches of the Life and Character of the Reverend Lemuel Haynes by Timothy Mather Cooley. Sketches of the Life and Character of the Reverend Lemuel Haynes by Timothy Mather Cooley. Not a bio that many people have heard of or would be inclined to pick up. It was published in 1837, just 4 years after Lemuel Haynes passed. We've done a whole episode on this podcast about Lemuel Haynes. So if you're interested more in a deep dive on him as a historical and church figure, you can go back and listen to that episode. But I'll just say briefly, during my time in Vermont, became familiar with Haynes as not just a historical Vermont pastor, but a significant American figure, the first black pastor of an all-white congregation in sort of the New Divinity, New Light, so theology heavily influenced by Jonathan Edwards and others. He was an American patriot, fought in the Revolutionary War, big fan of George Washington. He was an indentured servant, had a black father and a white mother, and was sold into indentured servitude. and grew up that way, but in a Christian home, and eventually became a pastor after he had ended his indenture as a young man. And just a fascinating guy. And the bio is like, it's so readable for as old as it is. It's broken up in a variety of ways. So you get like his early life, you get some of his like pastoral career. You have chapters that are just like these little anecdotes, just like four sentences, a piece of like, you know, funny things that he said and funny things that he did. It's really put together really, really well in a readable way for as old as it is. And I found an old copy that was pretty expensive, sort of not a first edition, but I think probably a second edition in a used bookstore in Vermont. But you can find reprints on Amazon for like $20 or something like that. It's still, you know, it's out of print per se, but they do reprints. All these different companies do reprints of this book. Highly recommend it for a really significant American historical figure, a really fascinating guy. He's one of those American church history guys that doesn't have an, I like to say, have an asterisk after their name.
Okay.
So I've already mentioned George Whitfield, big fan of George Whitfield. But, you know, when you talk about Whitfield, you got to talk about his influence on the slave trade in America. You talk about Edwards, huge fan of Edwards, but you got to talk about his influence on, or just his holding of slaves. It just seems like there's so many figures that you got to put an asterisk after their name, as with, you know, the patriarchs in the Bible, you know, every person's a sinner except for Jesus. But like with Charles Spurgeon, one reason why I think Spurgeon should be so honored and revered is that he seemed to be on the right side of the Lord's history on some of these things. And so there's, you know, if you have to, you know, nitpick Spurgeon at all, it's maybe he didn't take care of his physical health as well. But in terms of like moral, philosophical, ethical, you know, the guy's a stud.
Yeah.
And Haynes is like that. He's one of, I think, the most significant American historical figure, church historical figure that most Christians have never heard of.
Yeah.
And so, I won't say any more. I recommend you guys go back and check out that episode if you're interested in more about him. But certainly pick up this book. Yeah. Timothy Mather Cooley's Sketches of the Life and Character of the Reverend Lemuel Haynes.
And just as a reminder of all of the ones we've just recommended, I recommended The Life of D.L. Moody, A Biography of the Great Evangelist by A.P. Fitt, John Knox by Douglas Wilson, and then The Christian Heroes Then and Now series on Audible. And you can get that on other places as well.
I recommended No Compromise, The Story of Keith Green by Melody Green. George Whitfield, America's Spiritual Founding Father by Thomas Kidd. J.I. Packer, An Evangelical Life by Leland Ryken. And then, of course, this Haynes bio by Timothy Mather Cooley. If you enjoy this podcast, dear listener, please give us a good review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts. And until next time, may Jesus be big in your church. You've been listening to the For the Church podcast, hosted by Jared Wilson, found online at ftc.co. This resource is brought to you by Midwestern Baptist Theological Seminary in Kansas City, Missouri, where we train leaders for the church.